are going to be talking about Wisconsin's budget a lot this week and beyond. Governor Walker unveils his budget plan on Wednesday. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network. It is 8.5 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Monday, February 6th. Our State Capitol Bureau Chief Sean Johnson will preview in this first half of our State Capitol report what we know about the state budget and what we don't. And in our second half, we will examine a spending plan to help rural schools that Governor Walker released last week. We'll be talking after 7:30 with a guest from the Rural School Alliance. If you have questions or state budget-related views, if you want to talk about what you would like state government to do with your money, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Sean Johnson is Wisconsin Public Radio's State Capitol Bureau Chief. Good morning, Sean.
Good morning.
So you will be co-anchoring this coverage of Governor Scott Walker's state budget address to a joint session of the Wisconsin legislature on Wednesday afternoon at 4. So we already kind of know what's going to, a little bit of what's going
to
happen here.
We're starting to find out quite a bit of what's going to happen here with these pieces that the governor's been rolling out, particularly over the last week and over this weekend to a few news outlets, especially with regards to education.
So what about education? I understand he's proposing a hike in education spending.
He is, and this is something that was in a few published reports over the weekend. The governor wants to increase state spending by $649 million for K-12 schools in the next budget. So remember, just to put that in context, I mean, this is a governor that has cut schools in previous budgets, particularly his first budget, had a small cut proposed in the last budget. So it's definitely a change for him, but a substantial one. I mean, $649 million, it's not going to backfill everything that the state, you know, wasn't spending on schools for the past several years, but I don't think people saw that kind of a number coming.
Yeah, so just to clarify, this does not bring schools up to where they were, but it brings them up a lot.
It would be, so the state used to have this requirement that it spend it pick up 2/3 of the cost, yeah, of education, and that was something that went by the wayside toward the end of Governor Doyle's administration. But it was still higher under Doyle than in any budget that it had been under Walker. This money, if it gets approved in this budget, would bring the state's share to 64.6% of the share of education, which would be the highest. A lot of this coming from the State Journal article on this, the highest since 2009, so the highest percentage since Walker's been in office.
And this is more than the state superintendent of public instruction, Tony Evers, requested.
I need to look at that a little bit more. I think it varies on where, how they would spend the money, and whether, you know, Walker wants to spend it in a way that preserves this funding mechanism to keep property taxes low. Tony Evers wanted to do it, I think, more of a direct infusion to schools, but it's a per pupil increase for schools. So the Walker's talking about increasing it by $200 per pupil in the first school year that's covered by this budget, and $204 in the second school year of this budget. So that's been something that's practically unheard of since he's been in office, a definite change of direction for the governor.
Why is he saying he's doing this?
I think what he's talked about in recent stops has been that he now has the ability to it, and, you know, that the budget situation is better than it used to be. He's citing Act 10, you know, which made it easier for school districts to, I guess, fight off increases for teacher salaries, or it potentially cut teacher salaries. But essentially, that was that allowed schools to save money on labor, on teachers. And so that kind of changed the picture from 2011 till now. I think you also have to look at where we are in the election cycle. It's 2017. Everything lately that the governor has been doing and saying seems to be headed toward a reelection campaign in 2018. You know, the most recent public opinion surveys we saw showed that he had ground to make up. And so I think it could be argued that this is one of the ways that he's looking to do it.
Oh, what kind of reaction is this $649 million increase in state spending to schools? What kind of reaction are we getting?
It looked like from Tony Evers, the state school superintendent, an officially nonpartisan office, but Tony Evers is a Democrat. It looked like positive reaction from Tony Evers. It looked like positive reaction from groups that represent schools. Democrats were a little bit cautious here, saying we want to see the details of this. And you got to remember, he cut that money to begin with and then some. So they're saying, one, don't praise him too much for this. And two, let's see the details of how he gets there. But if you look at school groups and the state superintendent, they're pleased with this amount.
We have a call from Nancy in Green Bay on this topic. Hi, Nancy.
Good morning, Joy. Thank you for taking my call. Good morning, Sean.
Good morning.
I am calling because although the governor has said he's proposing $649 million additional dollars for K-12 public education, that will go along with the condition that dollar for dollar tax levies will be reduced. Therefore, it is not an overall increase in public education. Is that true?
So he wants to maintain a freeze. He wants to for the local property tax share of, you know, of the school budget.
So you're saying, Nancy, you heard that there would be a lowering of the tax levy more so than just the freeze that's in place.
Correct. That it is going to be more of a match, closer to a match. And I feel that, as you said, Sean, where we are in the election cycle is determining this move on the part of the governor, and he has a lot of ground to make up with those who support education, and that this is the way he's trying to do it. I agree that we need to see the details before we support this.
So that's not clear to you yet, Sean, but it's something that we can, or have you looked into that yet?
Yeah, I mean, this was something that the governor announced in a briefing that was embargoed with a handful of reporters. So that's all I've got to go on here. But it sounds like this from the State Journal's article on this, revenue limits will remain flat and districts will get more aid not tied to the state's equalized funding formula. So
what I'd like to see is at least let's split the difference. So if we have to reduce tax levy, let's only require that it's reduced by 50 cents on the dollar, which would result in a net increase in school funding.
All right. Thank you very much, Nancy. Do you want to?
I mean, it could get complicated in a hurry here, but I think it's going to go through this new, quote, categorical that Walker and legislators created that sort of circumvents the usual funding formula so that, you know, it in a way it takes property taxes out of the equation. But a little difficult to speculate here.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Nancy, for the call. Sean, we just have a couple of minutes before news break, and we will be talking about this rural school spending plan that the governor released last week, at least some of the details. Tell us essentially what this plan does.
So this would be another proposal floated by the governor last week that calls for increased state spending. This would be specifically for rural schools. I think the big piece of it is it increases sparsity aid by $20 million, and that goes to districts with fewer than 745 students and a low population density, so a density of fewer than 10 students per square mile. And he had actually expand that to schools that are a little bit larger than that. And then a boost in transportation aid for schools that have higher than average transportation costs in rural areas. So if they have a large district, they have high busing costs. This would be $10.4 million in state funding for that. And then some money for broadband expansion and grants for schools that use broadband for learning. So, you know, there's that is not a huge chunk of money, but coupled with the increase in, you know, public school funding, you're starting to see a trend there.
And we will be talking with a guest from the Rural Schools Alliance coming up after 7:30, who says that this plan is a step in the right direction. So we'll talk more about that coming up. And we will, after news, talk more with Sean about other areas of the state budget and what we are expecting at this point. And welcome your questions and reactions, too, at 1-800-642-1234. Governor Walker delivers his state budget address on Wednesday afternoon at 4 o'clock. We will broadcast that live here on the Ideas Network. Wisconsin Public Television's Frederica Freiberg and WPR's Sean Johnson will co-host this special live from the state capitol. And we are previewing the state budget right now with Wisconsin Public Radio's State Capitol Bureau Chief Sean Johnson, and welcoming your questions and welcoming your own budget requests at 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Just sort of a general question, Sean. I think many of our listeners are familiar with the state budget process, but this is something the governor does every 2 years, and this governs or mandates how the state spends its money over the next 2 years.
Yeah, I mean, and this is the opening document. You know, this is he proposes it. It goes to the legislature, and they'll spend the next few months talking about it, making their own changes to it, sending it back to him for his approval or rejection. But typically with budgets, especially with single party control here, the governor is going to get a lot of what he proposes, a lot of what he wants. Typically also with the last budget before a governor runs for reelection, if this is what he says he wants to run on, the legislature's probably not going to buck him on a whole lot.
And Governor Walker has said that he was going to make a formal decision as to whether he's going to seek another term in office after the state budget process is over.
Right. And, mm-hmm. you know, all signs are pointing to yes, I think, right now on him running for another term.
And generally, how many millions or billions of dollars are we talking about? Did I catch you off guard there?
Oh, man. Yeah. I mean, it's like in the neighborhood of $70 billion all funds. So if you're talking about state funding, federal funding, it's a pretty big number. However, the state has limited control over a lot of that money. So, you know, it's more north of $30 billion with state funding that the state controls.
So we've already talked about his announcement, at least the bare bones announcement, that he plans on increasing state spending for K through 12 education by $649 million. He also announced a increase in spending for rural schools in Wisconsin, which among other things, includes a $13 million increase for broadband expansion. We have Mary on Facebook who says, I am surprised by this increase in education. My requests would have been for more money for public education. She goes on to say she would like to see more to be done with our infrastructure and some other things as well. This is a surprise to more than just Mary, that he's proposing this increase in state school funding?
Yeah, definitely, because it doesn't follow a pattern for him. Also, the number is substantial. So the reason that we're even talking about an increase along those lines is that the legislature's nonpartisan budget office came out with new estimates recently showing that the state's going to have about $450 million more in tax revenue than it had previously thought over the next 2.5 years, and that the state had cut about $226 million from the current budget or had not spent $226 million in the current budget. So it has all this, quote, extra money to work with. And so we'll see how that balances out with what he's proposing there. But $649 million is high compared to his history of budgets.
Yeah. So we talked about K through 12 education. What about higher education, Sean?
We know that the governor wants to have a tuition cut there, and he's talked about backfilling that with state aid. So, you know, the university gets funding from a variety of sources, federal funding, state funding, tuition, grants. And so if you say university, you have to cut what you're taking in tuition revenue, that's a cut to university funding. So he's saying he's going to backfill that with state funding so that they don't feel that loss of revenue. Whether or not he does that and also increases the university's funding beyond that, we don't know yet. The university had asked for a $42.5 million increase over the next couple years. You know, not a huge increase compared to what they might have asked for in the past, possibly recognizing sort of the political reality that is they've been cut five of the last six budgets. So I don't know what's going to happen with their funding overall and whether, you know, he holds them even or they get cut or they get an increase. That's a little bit up in the air.
Well, we had Mary wanting more money for infrastructure improvements. I guess that's going to happen with transportation.
Well, I'm not sure. I mean, the governor, he stood in front of a variety of transportation projects back in September and introduced the Department of Transportation budget basically as if it were his own. And what that budget did was delay a number of projects, delay the completion of a number of projects, and borrow roughly $500 million to balance out a $1 billion shortfall. So it is definitely not solving the state's long-term transportation funding issues, that's for sure. And if the governor's talking about spending this extra money on schools, this extra revenue on schools, it seems like it may be ruling out what Assembly Republicans had talked about, which is let's have a $300 million tax cut in the general fund so that we can increase taxes on transportation somewhere. I don't know how that works into this proposal if the governor is talking about $650 million for schools. I'm not saying it won't work or wouldn't happen, but it seems to make it more difficult when the governor's not laying that out as his priority.
Yeah, and the governor has said that there would be no hike in the gas tax and there would be no increase in the vehicle registration fee unless there was some corresponding cuts elsewhere.
Right, and just in the way he spoke about the gas tax and the vehicle registration fee in his State of the State speech, it was very firm against those, saying we don't need those. So I almost think that they'd have to get creative with their revenue, Republicans would, if they wanted to increase funding for transportation.
All right. Well, a couple of other items. In fact, he announced last week something about restoring the earned income tax credit. This is something that was cut in a previous budget, right, Sean?
Cut by Governor Scott Walker in his first budget. I mean, you're noticing a trend here. And this is a credit that's meant to encourage low-wage employees to work. It increases their wages effectively. So about a quarter of it decreases income taxes for low-wage workers. The rest of it goes to effectively increase the wages of workers who don't owe income taxes. And he wants to increase that by $20 million a year, which is how much he cut it by in his 2011 budget. So we're seeing a trend here.
Yeah. Again, and why is he saying he's restoring this?
He's saying the times are different now. I mean, financially, times are different now. I would say, like, this is not me throwing shade on the governor here. I mean, the election is coming up, and that always affects the way that the governor, any governor, releases a budget. I mean, that budget is colored by the next election cycle. So I think that's a factor. But the governor also points out that things are different now than they were in 2011. You know, the unemployment rate is lower now than it was then. More people are working. You have more revenue in states' coffers to work with. So It makes it easier to accomplish these goals.
I'm going to take one. We have a couple of calls. See if we can fit one in with our time with you. John in Appleton.
Yeah, good morning. Thank you for all you do. I'm wondering why he's so short-term focused. Don't we have a structural deficit? I mean, his move in education not to address the need for a new funding formula is a problem. The transportation budget that everybody's heard about has all these projects to do. Why isn't he going after that? I mean, is it all just buying votes? I mean, he doesn't look long term. Do we have still a structural deficit in our state budget?
Yeah, what can you tell us about that, Sean?
For the general fund, the way that the Fiscal Bureau measures a structural deficit, I'm not sure right now, and I'm not sure what it would be with this proposal. I can tell you that it hasn't been a given yes that we have a structural deficit over the last years. It's kind of flicked on and off from time to time. The other issues you mentioned there, a funding formula for education, that's something that Assembly Speaker Robin Voss said he wanted to look into. That is quite a political can of worms there when you start to deal with that. I don't know if the governor will make any nod to that in his speech, but it doesn't sound like it from the articles read over the weekend. The transportation fund, if what was proposed by the DOT in September is the governor's transportation budget, that is not going to, solve any long-term issues there in terms of debt service or delayed projects, worsening road conditions. So that is one area where I think the governor, when it comes to the transportation budget, it seems like, at least so far, his big selling point is, I'm not raising taxes.
Yeah. Well, as we need to wrap up with you, Sean, what there was another story last week that certainly has budget implications when it has to do with this the redistricting issue, which is in the courts. Tell us what happened.
Yeah, changing gears quickly here. Republican legislative leaders authorized the hiring of attorneys, private attorneys. So they're already being represented, or the state is, in this redistricting challenge by Wisconsin's attorney general, a Republican. Legislative leaders were not named in this challenge, but they have an interest in it, obviously. And so they circulated a ballot last week to authorize the hiring of two private law firms. There's no cap on what they would pay those firms. And if Assembly Speaker Robin Voss and Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald wanted to, they could hire more firms. I mean, they have basically, under this proposal, there's no limit on what they could do.
And what the GOP lawmakers want here is attorneys to represent the Republican Party, so the Republican Party will not have to redraw the legislative maps?
Officially, they're representing the legislature, but practically they're representing Republican legislators here who drew this map in 2011. And they want to overturn a federal court decision, a 2-1 federal court decision handed down in November that said Wisconsin's maps are unconstitutional. And that same court said that the legislature needs to redraw those maps by November of this year. That case is going to get appealed to the U.S. Supreme Court. And so this is Republican legislative leaders getting involved, basically. And they want to overturn the case. If this case holds and the Supreme Court upholds it, a new national standard has been set that this would be a landmark case. It would be the first partisan gerrymandering claim that would have ever been successfully brought before the U.S. Supreme Court. If it gets overturned, then it's like many other cases that didn't quite get there.
I'm going to let you go, but is there anything that you are looking for, watching for, listening for when the governor delivers his state budget address on Wednesday?
It'll be nice to know sort of the other side of how he gets to $649 million in increased funding for schools. Also, just looking for the surprises we haven't heard about yet. Well, there's a lot of information out there, actually, for the budget at this point.
But there's always a surprise.
There is always a surprise.
Thank you, Sean. We'll listen for it. Sean Johnson is Wisconsin Public Radio's State Capital Bureau Chief, and he will be co-hosting our coverage of the governor's budget address, which is coming up Wednesday at 4, and you can hear it here live on the Ideas Network. This is our State Capitol Report. I'm Joy Cardine. We are now going to follow up in a little bit more depth on one of the issues that will be addressed in the state budget address, that being an increase in aid in support for rural schools. Our guest for this half of the State Capitol Report says it is a step in the right direction. Our guest is Kim Kokel, the Executive Director of the Wisconsin Rural Schools Alliance. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much. And I apologize for coming to you a little later than we said we would. But are you generally, you said this is a step in the right direction. What do you like about Governor Walker's rural schools spending plan?
Well, it addresses some of the issues that we had discussed with the governor back in October when we went in for our budget meeting with his office. And, you know, I was glad to see the second tier of sparsity aid that was put in there. That was something that we had requested. The only difference in his proposal and our request was we had asked to go up to enrollment of 1,500 just because I think that would have included a lot more schools that could have used that sparsity aid, but have higher enrollments, and we have a number of our rural member districts that have that higher enrollment that could use that additional sparsity aid.
Can you explain very briefly what sparsity aid is and why does a rural school need a sparsity aid?
It's based on number of per pupils per square mile, and presently the sparsity aid goes to rural districts that have less than 740 pupils in their district and a population density of less than 10 pupils per square mile.
I see. And so the proposal is to increase that sparsity aid by $20 million. There's other things, but you by saying it's a step in the right direction, that almost sounds like you think there needs to be a few more steps in that direction. It's not a full-throated endorsement. What is there some place where this is coming up short?
Well, as I said, I think if it would have went to the enrollment of about 1,500, it would have included the majority of districts that really did need it. I mean, like I said, it's a step in the right direction. It helps a lot of our smaller districts and brings in another tier there, so I'm not going to complain. But saying it's a step in the right direction, I think it would have helped some more a number of more rural schools if it would have went to the enrollment of 1,500.
There would also be more than $25 million for the high-cost transportation aid program. That's an increase of $10.4 million. This helps school districts pay for busing students. How big a deal is this?
Again, it helps a number of our schools, but it still leaves a number of our rural schools outside looking in because they've been efficient with their transportation costs. And many of them fall just a little short of that 150% threshold of state average. And we had actually requested a second tier there also that would have been 125% to about 149%. Again, that would have helped a number of districts that just, you know, could use that are very sparse and do a large amount of busing, but have been efficient with how they do their transportation to keep the cost down.
We're going to check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we'll continue talking with Kim Kokel, the Executive Director of the Wisconsin Rural Schools Alliance. He's also a member of the Regional Education Laboratory Midwest's Rural Research Alliance. And we welcome your questions. We welcome your reactions to this increase, at least proposed increase in support in for rural schools in Wisconsin. Do you have any thoughts as to the needs of rural schools today? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. When we come back, we'll talk about this increase in money toward broadband internet. That's after the news.